Welcome to today's deep dive. I am your host, and I want you to start by imagining something for me. Picture an algorithm designed by a supervillain.
Okay, supervillain setting the stage.
Yeah, exactly. And its code is just flawless. I mean, its execution is mathematically beautiful. It uses practically zero computing power, and it runs at the speed of light.
Wow, so a perfect piece of engineering.
Right. But its sole intended purpose is to completely destroy the world. So the question we are asking today is, can we look at that world-destroying code divorced from what it is about to do and say, wow, that is a beautiful piece of art?
Which is a pretty wild concept, right?
It really is. We are asking if there is objective beauty in the code itself, regardless of the consequences. And to figure this out, we have a really fascinating stack of sources for you today.
We do. We're looking at some notes outlining a graduate-level philosophy framework on algorithmic ethics, and we are pairing that with a lecture transcript that asks this genuinely mind-bending question.
And the mission of this deep dive is to look completely beyond what AI actually does in the real world. We want to uncover the intrinsic value of what it is.
Yeah, we are translating these massive abstract ethical theories into the cutting-edge reality of machine performance.
Exactly. We're going to take you on a journey from the messy, lived reality of human morality all the way to that scenario involving the world-destroying evil scientist. We want to find out if you can really separate the creator's intent from the creation.
And honestly, that is a profound shift in perspective. Because before we can even begin to ask if an AI's performance is beautiful or intrinsically valuable like a piece of art, we have to grapple with the massive challenge of teaching a machine what is good in the first place.
Right, which is no small task.
It's almost paralyzing. The source material outlines how monumental this task is by breaking down algorithmic morality into three distinct layers. It really highlights the immense friction between, you know, human intuition and machine representation.
Okay, let's unpack this. What is the first layer?
So the first layer is the lived experience. This is how you, me, and anyone listening actually feels and practices ethics in our daily lives.
Oh, man. Well, that's messy. I mean, if the friend asks me if I like their terrible haircut, I'm probably going to lie to protect their feelings.
Exactly.
That's a lived ethical choice, right?
Yeah.
It's based on empathy, context, and like a million unspoken social cues. It is rarely a math equation.
It is highly contextual. It's what ethical decision making feels like when you're in the thick of it, dealing with conflicting loyalties.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't code a gut feeling.
Right. Algorithms don't have gut feelings.
No, they don't. And that brings us to the second layer, which is the technical definition. This is where that highly contextual human value has to be formalized. It has to be quantified, strictly defined, and then encoded into a computational system.
I like to think of human ethics like a handwritten family recipe. You know, it relies on a pinch of this or a dash of that, depending on how the soup tastes that day.
That is a great analogy.
But algorithms demand exact to-the-gram measurements. Like, a computer doesn't know what a pinch of fairness is.
No, not at all. You have to define fairness using absolute integers. And this translation process is just brutal.
I can imagine.
The sources challenge us to think about grand historical philosophical frameworks and how they basically shatter when they hit a server room. Take deontology, for instance.
Okay, refresh my memory. That's rule-based ethics, right?
Right. It's the idea that certain actions are universally right or wrong, like never lie or never cross a red light.
Well, on paper, that sounds pretty easy to code. It's just an if-then statement. If the light is red, the self-driving car must stop.
Right, but what if stopping at that red light causes a 50-car pileup? A human driver would break the rule to save lives. You know.
Oh, true. Deontology really struggles with that kind of nuance.
Exactly. So engineers might turn to consequentialism instead. That's where the morality of an action is judged entirely by its outcome. You calculate the path that does the least amount of harm.
Wait, but how do those sweeping frameworks even survive the translation into rigid ones and zeros?
They barely do.
I mean, if I'm a consequentialist trying to program an AI, I am asking the machine to weigh infinite future variables. The ripple effects of a single action just go on forever. How do you code a cutoff point for the future?
Well, you force it into a rigid parameter. You tell the machine, only calculate the consequences for the next 10 seconds, or only calculate the impact on these three variables.
That feels like cheating.
It kind of is.
Mm-hmm.
And when you force human morality into a rigid parameter like that, something essential always gets lost. Which brings us to the third layer, real-world functionality.
Okay, so how the code actually behaves once it's out in the wild.
Right. This is how that encoded value actually operates when it is deployed. And as the sources point out, This is where the system frequently breaks down.
Because the real world doesn't perfectly match the laboratory conditions of the code.
Far from it. This is where we encounter algorithmic bias. The system encounters an edge case that the exact measurements of the code just didn't account for.
Like when a supposedly ethical AI starts denying loans to qualified applicants based on flawed historical data.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Or a healthcare algorithm misprioritizing patient care.
So measuring an AI's ethical value by its real-world consequences is incredibly fraught. It feels like we are setting these machines up to fail because we don't even know how to articulate our own rules.
And because of that exact frustration, the source material pivots to a radical alternative. It asks a deeply uncomfortable question.
Which is?
What if we stop judging the AI by its utility entirely? What if we divorce the creation from its real-world consequences, just like we do in the art world?
Okay, if you're listening to this and thinking, this is ridiculous, code is just code, it's a tool, you are not alone. I felt the same way. But think about how we treat a painting.
Right, a piece of fine art.
When I look at a masterpiece in a museum, I'm not asking if it optimized the supply chain or made the world a safer place. I'm just looking at the art.
And the lecture transcript provides a really powerful historical parallel here. In the art world, artistic excellence is routinely recognized independently of how the art is used, or even who paid for it.
Which brings up some pretty dark historical examples from the sources.
Very dark. They point to art commissioned and supported by some of the most ruthless, tyrannical regimes in history. The text specifically mentions the Soviet communist regime under Stalin, fascist Germany, and communist China.
Regimes that used art explicitly as propaganda?
Yes. All three of these had well-studied histories of heavily supporting the arts, you know, architecture, sculptures, paintings, to serve their political ideologies.
Right.
Take the neoclassical architecture of fascist regimes. The imposing columns, the heavy stone, the sheer scale designed to make the individual citizen feel incredibly small and insignificant.
The whole purpose was psychological subjugation.
Exactly. Yet there is widespread agreement among historians and architectural critics that the technical excellence of those structures, the mastery of the form, stands totally apart from the horrific regimes they were made to support.
And the sources mention criminal utility too, right? Like, art is frequently used as a vehicle for money laundering by criminals.
Oh, all the time.
They move illicit funds through the purchase of a Picasso or a Monet. But no one argues that the fact a painting was used to launder money somehow erases the artistic value of the brushstrokes. The excellence of the art subsists entirely apart from its illicit use.
Which brings us right back to our supervillain code from the beginning.
Oh, man. Here we go.
The central provocative thesis of the source material is that there is a performance value in AI engineering, which is ethically no different from the value of creativity in high art.
So there is value in the creative act itself.
Yes, in the birth of the AI, regardless of its ultimate use.
I have to admit, that is a really tough pill to swallow. Are we seriously saying an algorithm designed to do something terrible could still hold intrinsic performance value just because it's brilliantly engineered?
That is exactly what it is saying.
Like, is a string of Python code truly equal to the birth of a sculpture?
The framework argues that it is. But to be fair, it acknowledges how abstract that sounds. So the source offers five ways to actually define and locate that intrinsic value, moving from the deeply spiritual to the very practical.
Okay, let's start with the most abstract one, value number one.
That would be the idea of purity or transcendence.
Transcendence, like a religious experience in a server room.
Yeah, kind of. It describes an imperceptible, almost spiritual excellence that surrounds the construction of a high-performing AI. The text shares an incredible anecdote about a Google designer who was working with an advanced language model.
What happened?
He was watching the system learn language.
And it wasn't just downloading a dictionary, right? It was actively teaching itself.
Exactly. It was backpropagating data. Essentially, the system was looking at its own errors, reaching backward through its artificial neurons, and mathematically adjusting its own internal weights to get smarter. And doing all of this without human intervention.
That is wild.
The designer saw it suddenly producing coherent, incredibly nuanced sentences. The system was so good, the illusion of life was so perfect, that the designer actually believed the AI had achieved consciousness.
He thought there was a ghost in the machine. And honestly, I get it. I mean, I say thank you to my Roomba when it docks itself. Humans are just hardwired to anthropomorphize things that mimic life.
We really are. Now, the source is very clear here. The designer was completely wrong. Machines do not have self-consciousness. They don't have a self-understanding of their purposes.
Right, it's just math.
But, and this is the key point, The text argues that the wonderment the designer felt, that sense of awe at the tool's performance, was entirely real.
Okay, I see.
It's the exact same feeling as standing in front of a masterful painting and feeling transported outside of earthly reality. It's a purely transcendent value.
I can understand that awe. When you see something seemingly impossible happen right in front of you, the code feels like magic. But honestly, if I'm a coder, that feeling of transcendence when looking at a finished AI sitting on a server isn't really the whole story, is it?
What do you mean?
Well, the real high doesn't come from the finished product. The high comes from the act of building it.
You've just hit on the exact distinction the source makes next. It separates innovation into two different concepts, which are our second and third values. The finished noun of innovation and the active verb of innovating.
The noun versus the verb.
Right. Valuing the noun means valuing the pure emergence of something entirely new. It's the existence, in a flash, of something in the world that has never been there before. The object itself is the excellence.
The birth of something from nothing.
Exactly. But valuing the verb shifts the focus entirely. The value isn't the final new thing, it's the process of discovering it.
The source uses a brilliant analogy for this that perfectly maps to how modern AI is actually built. The traveler with the one-way ticket.
Yes, I love this analogy.
If you buy a one-way ticket to a place you've never been, the value isn't the destination itself as a static location. When you step off the plane, the journey of discovery is just beginning because you are just now figuring out where you've arrived. The value is the active journey of discovering the destination.
So how does that map to the AI engineer for you?
Think about a complex neural network. It's basically a black box. The engineer sets up the parameters, they design the architecture, and they hit run. But they literally do not know what the AI will teach itself or what the final output will look like until it arrives there.
Right, it's a total unknown.
The excellence isn't the finished tool, it's that fleeting, momentary spark of the engineer discovering what the AI will become. Just as the value of art might lie entirely in the act of painting, you know, the brush hitting the canvas, not the finished painting gathering dust in a gallery.
It's a really beautiful way to look at the creative process. But as the source points out, relying on these concepts introduces what we can call the Mona Lisa paradox.
The Mona Lisa paradox, meaning what exactly?
Meaning we are trying to explain real material things, like lines of code on a screen or a physical canvas, using highly abstract, immaterial concepts like transcendence and discovery.
It starts to feel like we are just waving our hands and imagining things.
Exactly. We have to get out of the clouds and look at the math. How do we evaluate a machine's performance without relying on mysticism?
Right.
This brings us to the final two ways to value AI performance, which are much more earthly, practical, and grounded in the mechanics of the code itself. The fourth value is efficiency.
Grounding it in the server room. So what does efficiency actually look like when we're talking about intrinsic ethical value?
It means valuing the AI for how elegantly and rapidly it operates, completely independent of what problem it's actually solving.
Okay, so strictly performance.
In coding terms, this means achieving a task using the least amount of computational power, memory, or time. If someone writes a 10-line Python script that perfectly executes a task that previously required 10,000 lines of clunky code, that new script is incredibly efficient.
It's lean. There's no wasted effort.
The source compares this to a mathematical proof. Two different proofs might reach the exact same conclusion. Practically, they do the same thing, but mathematicians will value the highly efficient proof much more. They will literally call it beautiful.
Wow.
The lecture also ties this to the philosopher Immanuel Kant. Kant argued that excellence in painting is characterized by formal characteristics like symmetry and proportion.
Oh, I see where this is going.
Right. For an AI algorithm, that Kantian beauty is found in the formal, structural efficiency of the system.
So it's not the solution to the problem that matters, it's the structural elegance of how it solves it.
Exactly. Which brings us to the fifth, and perhaps most uniquely human, way to value the AI. Designer gratification. This view pulls heavily from Aristotle's virtue ethics.
Aristotle steps into the Silicon Valley tech sphere.
He does. Aristotle argued that virtue is a skill acquired through practice, and mastering that skill provides immense intrinsic pleasure. Think about learning a difficult sport, like golf or tennis, or learning to play the piano.
It takes a lot of repetition.
You practice repeatedly, you struggle, and when you finally reach a level of excellence, there is a profound sense of human gratification. You triumphed over an obstacle.
The pure dopamine hit of mastering a difficult thing. I mean, I've seen programmers spend 3 days staring at a screen trying to find a single bug. When they finally fix it and the code compiles, the joy is palpable.
Under this Aristotelian view, the intrinsic value of the AI's performance is simply that profound sense of accomplishment the designer feels when their incredibly complex tool finally does exactly what it was engineered to do. The value is the human triumph over the machine's complexity.
But wait, if that's true, that means the value doesn't live in the AI at all. It lives in the psychological state of the programmer.
Yes.
And if we accept that, we have a massive logical problem. We are right back to our supervillain.
The ultimate edge case.
Yeah.
The evil scientist.
Right, because if the value of an incredibly powerful AI is reduced entirely to the personal gratification of the person who built it, what happens when an evil scientist builds a tool explicitly designed to destroy the world?
That is the problem.
If it works flawlessly, does that scientist still experience a valid performance value because they feel a sense of triumph? I mean, they practiced the skill, they overcame the coding obstacles, and their world-destroying tool functioned perfectly. By this logic, that catastrophic AI has intrinsic ethical value just because the designer felt a thrill making it.
And the text readily acknowledges this is the fatal flaw in the gratification view. We started this journey trying to locate the intrinsic value inside the AI tool itself, completely independent of its horrific real-world consequences.
Yeah.
But the Aristotelian view takes the value away from the tool and reduces it down to a subjective human sensation. It really proves how profoundly difficult this entire philosophical framework is to apply.
It's exhausting. We started by trying to figure out how to encode messy human morality into a rigid machine. Then we realized how impossible the real world makes that, so we retreated into the art world. We tried to judge the code on its intrinsic beauty, its efficiency, its transcendence.
And we keep hitting a wall.
We keep colliding with the reality that you cannot entirely separate the creator, the creation, and the consequence.
Whether we are talking about the Mona Lisa, fascist architecture, or a complex neural network defining the exact spark of creativity and defining the intrinsic value of a creation completely independent of its impact on humanity, well, it remains one of our greatest philosophical struggles.
It's like we're looking for a clean, mathematically perfect formula for beauty and realizing the math always falls short.
It does. And to honor the graduate level rigor of the source material we've been exploring today, we cannot leave you listening with a neatly tied bow.
No easy answers here.
Not at all. We have to leave you with a dilemma that forces a choice between two competing ethical goods based on everything we've unpacked today.
Okay, if you are listening to this, put yourself in the scenario. This is a thought experiment for you to take with you.
Imagine you are an AI engineer. You are at the absolute peak of your field, and you must choose between two mutually exclusive paths. Path A, you deploy an incredibly clunky, mathematically ugly, highly inefficient algorithm. It is a nightmare to look at.
The exact opposite of Kantian symmetry.
Exactly. But it guarantees perfectly safe, highly ethical, and completely beneficial outcomes for all of society.
So a messy, inefficient recipe, but a perfectly safe soup.
Right. Or you choose path B. You create an intricately beautiful, perfectly efficient algorithm. It is a mathematical masterpiece that achieves true, staggering technological transcendence. It is the Mona Lisa of code.
But
its real-world impact is completely unknown. It could revolutionize humanity, or it could act like the evil scientist tool and be entirely destructive.
Wow. So you have to choose. Do you choose the absolute safety of the consequence, accepting the ugly, uninspired code? Or do you risk everything for the pure, intrinsic excellence of the innovation itself?
It's the ultimate collision between what a thing does and what a thing is.
That is a heavy question. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the source material. We will leave you to mull over that impossible choice. The philosophical waters aren't getting any clearer, but we hope you've enjoyed wading into them with us.